facebook.com/VOA1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, we learn what one newspaper in Finland did to mark World Press Freedom Day. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, Finland's largest daily newspaper, Helsingin Sanomat, marked World Press Freedom Day on May 3rd by using a popular online video game to get around Russian media restrictions. Editor-in-chief Antero Muka said the paper has hidden stories about Russia's war in Ukraine in the game Counter-Strike. The game is popular worldwide and among young Russian men. Russia has restricted independent news sources in the country since its invasion of Ukraine. Since last year, the government has banned free reporting and blocked Russians from getting independent media content produced in other countries. In answer to laws restricting press freedom in Russia, Helsingin Sanomat began publishing some of its Ukraine and Russia-related news in Russian last year. But Russia quickly restricted the content. Muka told Reuters reporters, "We decided that maybe it's possible to find some new channels to provide Russian audience with some reliable, independent journalism, for example, about the situations in Ukraine." So they turned to Counter-Strike. The game was released in 2012 by U.S.-based private game maker Valve Corporation. It ranks among the world's top 10 most popular computer games, data from the research firm Newzoo shows. The newspaper built a map of an unspecified war-torn Slavic city and named it Dvoyna. The word Vojna in Russian means war. The term is banned in Russia as a description of the conflict in Ukraine. The Russian government instead calls the war a special military operation. The map hides a secret room where the newspaper keeps images and stories of the cruelties witnessed by its reporters and photographers in Ukraine. Muka said the Finnish newspaper did not seek Valve's permission to add its content to the game. Counter-Strike lets users create and add their own content to its platform. Muka said, "If some young men in Russia, just because of this game, happen to think for a couple of seconds what is going on in Ukraine, then it's worth it."
A man widely considered the godfather of artificial intelligence, AI, says he quit his job at Google to speak freely about the dangers of the technology. Jeffrey Hinton recently spoke to the New York Times and other press about his experiences at Google and his wider concerns about AI development. He told the Times he left the search engine company last month after leading the Google research team in Toronto, Canada, for 10 years. During his career, the 75-year-old Hinton has pioneered work on deep learning and neural networks. A neural network is a computer processing system built to act like the human brain. Hinton's work helped form the base for much of the AI technology in use today. In 2019, Hinton and three other computer scientists received the Turing Award for their separate work related to neural networks. The award has been described as the Nobel Prize of Computing. The other two winners, Joshua Bengio and Yann LeCun, have also expressed concerns about the future of AI. In recent months, a number of new AI technologies have been introduced. Microsoft-backed American startup OpenAI launched its latest AI model, ChatGPT-4, in March. Other technology companies have invested in computing tools, including Google's Bard system. Such tools are known as chatbots. The recently released AI tools have demonstrated the ability to perform human-like discussions and create complex documents based on short written commands. Speaking to the BBC, Hinton called the dangers of such tools quite scary. He added, "Right now, they're not more intelligent than us, as far as I can tell. But I think they soon will be." He said he believes AI systems are getting smarter because of the massive amounts of data they take in and examine. Hinton also told MIT Technology Review he fears some bad individuals might use AI in ways that could seriously harm society. Such effects could include AI systems interfering in elections or inciting violence. He told The Times he thinks AI systems could create a world in which people will not be able to know what is true anymore. Hinton said he retired from Google so that he could speak openly about the possible risks of the technology as someone who no longer works for the company. "I want to talk about AI safety issues without having to worry about how it interacts with Google's business," he told MIT Technology Review. Since announcing his departure, Hinton has said he thinks Google had acted very responsibly in its own AI development. In March, hundreds of AI experts and industry leaders released an open letter expressing deep concerns about current AI development efforts. The letter identified a number of harms that could result from such development. These included increases in propaganda and misinformation, the loss of millions of jobs to machines, and the possibility that AI could one day take control of our civilization. The letter urges a halt to development of some kinds of AI. Turing Prize winner Bengio, Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak, and Elon Musk, leader of SpaceX, Tesla, and Twitter, signed the letter. The organization that released the letter, Future of Life, is financially supported by the Musk Foundation. Musk has long warned of the possible dangers of AI. Last month, he told Fox News he planned to create his own version of some AI tools released in recent months. Musk said his new AI tool would be called TruthGPT. He described it as truth-seeking AI that will seek to understand humanity so it is less likely to destroy it. Alondra Nelson is the former head of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, which seeks to create guidelines for the responsible use of AI tools. She told the Associated Press, "For good or for not, what the chatbot moment has done is made AI a national conversation and an international conversation that doesn't only include AI experts and developers." Nelson added that she hopes the recent attention on AI can create a new conversation about what we want a democratic future and a non-exploitative future with technology to look like. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about this week's technology report. Thanks for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Glad to be here.
In your report, we heard from AI pioneer Jeffrey Hinton, who is speaking out about the speed of AI development and the possible dangers the technology could cause to society. It seems we are now hearing increased warnings from industry leaders and government officials about these dangers. Why is that?
Well, I think one big reason is because there has just been more media coverage about a series of newly released AI tools like ChatGPT, and this has given critics more chances to voice their concerns. In addition, many people have been surprised and amazed at the human-level quality the AI tools themselves are now performing at.
We learned in the report that Jeffrey Hinton said he thought his former employer, Google, had been responsible in its AI development efforts. But what is he proposing that AI developers do now to try to prevent the technology from harming humanity?
So the main thing he is proposing is that leaders of the technology industry come together and try to agree on what the current risks are and to seek to establish measures to prevent AI harms. And one way he has suggested to do this is to model an agreement after the international ban on chemical weapons. He said a similar agreement regarding AI could be effective since the chemical weapons ban has mostly been followed worldwide.
Well, thanks again for joining me, Brian, to talk more about this week's report.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. The United States entered the Second World War in December of 1941. Europe had already been at war since 1939, but the United States did not enter World War II until Japanese forces attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack was a surprise, but American military and political leaders had believed that the United States, sooner or later, would be pulled into the fighting, and they began to prepare for war. President Franklin Roosevelt had been Assistant Secretary of the Navy under President Woodrow Wilson during World War I. He remembered how American troops were not ready for that war. Now that he was president, Roosevelt wanted to be sure that the United States would be ready when it had to fight. Throughout 1941, Roosevelt urged American industries to produce more weapons and other military supplies. He established new government agencies to work with industry to increase arms production. Some business leaders resisted Roosevelt's efforts. They felt there was no need to produce more arms while the United States was still at peace. But many others cooperated, and by the time Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, the American economy was producing millions of guns and other weapons. Still, this was not enough to fight a war. After the Japanese attack, Roosevelt increased his demands on American industry. He called for 60,000 warplanes, 45,000 tanks, and 20,000 anti-aircraft guns. And he wanted all these within 1 year. A month after the Pearl Harbor raid, Roosevelt organized a special committee to direct military production. He created another group to help companies find men and women for defense work. And he established a new office where the nation's best scientists and engineers could work together to design new weapons. These new government organizations faced several problems. Sometimes factories produced too much of one product and not enough of another. Sometimes tools broke, and some business owners refused to accept government orders. But the weapons were produced, and American troops soon had the guns and supplies they needed. The federal government had to quickly expand its own workforce to meet war needs. Federal spending increased from $6 billion in 1940 to $89 billion in 1944. That was 15 times as much spending in just 5 years. Roosevelt had to take strong steps to get the money for all this spending. He put limits on wages. He increased income taxes to as much as 94% on portions of incomes over $200,000. And he asked the American people to lend money to the federal government. The people answered by purchasing almost $100 billion in war bonds. The great increase in public spending raised the threat of high inflation. Roosevelt created a special office with the power to control prices. Many Americans agreed with the idea of price controls. But every business wanted somebody else's prices controlled, not their own. Federal officials had to work hard to keep prices and supplies under control. They restricted how much meat, fuel, and other goods people could buy. The price control program generally worked, Its success kept the American economy strong to support the troops fighting in Europe and Asia. One reason these strong economic steps worked was because most of the American people fully supported the war effort.
She's the poet of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie, the riveter, keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little friend can do more than a myth can do. Rosie, the riveter, Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie. Charlie, he's a Marine. Rosie is protecting Charlie, working overtime on the riveting machine. When they gave her a production lead, she was as proud as a girl could be. There's something true about red, white, and blue about Rosie, the riveter.
You can look at photographs of people from those times and see in their faces how strongly they felt. In one picture from the state of North Carolina, a group of men are standing in front of old rubber tires. They are planning to give the tires to the Army to be fixed and used for military vehicles. Another photo shows a woman visiting a hospital. She is singing to a soldier to lift his spirits. Still another photo shows a man who owns a small food store. He is placing signs on meat and cans of food to tell people how much they are allowed to buy. You can also get an idea about the feelings of the times by the names of some of the popular songs during World War II. In addition to Rosie the Riveter, there were songs like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. One of the most hopeful songs was this one, recorded by Britain's Vera Lynn. Not all Americans supported the war. A small number refused to fight because of religious or moral beliefs. They were known as conscientious objectors. And some Americans supported Adolf Hitler and other fascists. But almost everyone else wanted to win the war quickly and return to a normal life. Many Japanese Americans served with honor in the United States Armed Forces. But many Americans were suspicious of anyone whose family had come from Japan. They refused to trust even Japanese-American families who had lived in the United States for more than a century. Many banks refused to lend money to Japanese Americans. Many stores would not sell to them. The federal government relocated thousands of Japanese Americans in California and other states into internment camps. They were released only after the war ended. It was many years before the government officially apologized for mistreating Japanese Americans. But World War II did lead to progress for another group that was often the target of discrimination, Black Americans. Black leaders spoke out. They said it was unfair to fight a war for freedom in Europe while Black Americans did not have all the same freedoms as white citizens.
Negroes want the same things that white citizens possess. All of their rights, and no force under the sun can stem and block and stop this civil rights revolution which is now underway.
In 1941, a leader in the Black community, A. Philip Randolph, threatened to lead a giant march on Washington for civil rights for Blacks. President Roosevelt reacted by issuing an order that made it a crime to deny Blacks a chance for jobs in defense industries. He also ordered the armed forces to change some of their rules that discriminated against Black service members. Blacks made progress in the military and defense industries, but most other industries still refused to give them an equal chance. Major progress on civil rights would not come until the 1950s and 60s. Life was busy during the war years. There were many changes in the economy, business, music, race relations, and other areas. But in many ways, life continued as it always does. Americans did what they could during the hard years of World War II to keep life on the home front as normal as possible. But almost everyone understood that the first job was to support the troops overseas and win the war. This strength of purpose at home gave American soldiers the support they needed, and it also helped President Roosevelt as he negotiated with other world leaders. Diplomacy and foreign relations became much more complex during the war.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.